Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the December 10th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Kurt Kimmel of Bate Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign County, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin our discussion today, as usual, with a list of items we ought to talk about. I think we'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, the obvious is probably the monthly supply-demand report we saw this past week and maybe what the implications of that is as we move forward from here.
Wayne Nelson?
Argentina, what's going to happen there? We've got promises. We've had lots of things talked about, but what's going to really happen?
And Jackie Vicks.
Well, you stole mine, Wayne, because Argentina certainly was where I was going to go, but I guess I'd have to say, you know, the China situation is concerning, you know, and we are going to have that 10-year baseline projections coming out tomorrow, on Friday, so that'll be interesting to see, too, find out what actually happens.
In fact, let's start with Argentina. So they have a new president sworn in as about this time on Thursday afternoon, not too very long ago. What do you expect in the way of changes, Jackie, and will it really make a difference in what kind of commodities flow out of Argentina and at what pace?
Well, I think when you look at the big picture in Argentina, of course, is, you know, Macri was very vocal about them planting more corn. He took out full-page ads telling farmers to plant corn. And, you know, that's quite something because Argentina has had physical control over the corn crop for years and years and years while it was underneath Cristina Kirchner. And so, if he lifts the ban on that, I would expect that what we'll see is we'll see Argentina go back to a more normal 50-50 rotation, probably similar to us. But the bigger deal is, can he actually lift the currency control? You know, if indeed what's implied is if he lifts the currency control, it would relate to about a 30% decrease in their costs. In other words, an increase to them. And then he was talking about lifting 5% of the actual export tax. I think what we're all wondering about is, well, there's a couple things. One, if he makes this change, is there enough American dollars available to the country to be able to do that? Number two, will it be a long-term lift or will it be a 90-day lift? If it was a 90-day lift, I think it would really be terrifying for us because, you know, it would have to put a lot of grain on the market at that point in time. And but even the bigger question is now, will the South American farmer actually sell? You know, because we were over par on the U.S. dollar last week, and now we're back down below 98. And, you know, each time the dollar gets higher, that gives them more money. So when you talk about going out of there, I would have to say there's probably somewhere that the estimates are 350 to 450 million bushels of beans sitting around. There are no good estimates on corn because they really haven't done a whole lot of exporting on corn at this point in time. But there's just no question that whatever's around there, depending upon what he does, is going to hit the export market. And with the dollar where it is, it's certainly not going to be a positive thing for us.
And so we're still debating on how much competition really will happen there. Some of it's based on the value of their currency. Some of it's based on, and the tax that's coming off is going to roll off, according to what we've seen so far, really slowly. I think it's 35%, and the plan is only to roll down 5% each year, so it'll take some time before soybeans are coming out of Argentina tax-free.
Well, that's true, but, you know, see, he's a pretty smart guy. You know, if he actually lifts the currency ban, that's the equivalent of a 30% tax gone right there. So, you know, with the 5% tax reduction. And then if he takes this currency thing, that's the equivalent of 35% gone. So I wouldn't say, I wouldn't make the statement that it's going to take a long time. Yes, it will take a long time to roll off the actual tax per se. But this thing that he's talking about, he's a smart guy. He's talking about reducing the value of that peso to the point that it would give them the equivalent of that extra 30%. And that's where we could really be hurt.
Does this mean that you should be more concerned about corn and wheat, both of which will lose the tariffs that are in place now, supposedly immediately?
Well, I think it bears concern for everything, no matter what it is. You know, and it, to me, it just says basically their competitive edge against us just goes up so much. And also their desire to be able to continue to plant. As long as the dollar is high and they get based in and paid in currency based on the U.S. dollar, there's no reason for us to believe that they won't follow suit with Brazil and continue to increase acres.
They, number one, they did move to the lowest price corn offers today or Thursday during the day. The farmers down there and the Argentines did come right, they're right with the same price as U.S., which was the top of that market. The other thing we have to remember is he does not control the Senate, and he doesn't have a majority that's split up like three ways in the House down there. So, mm-hmm. you know, he can't just push everything quite through that he'd like to, or we don't know that he'll be able to, or how much problems there'll be. So there's some inner political problems, just like Washington. There can be gridlock.
Yeah, there's not going to be, I don't think, a real honeymoon stage for him down there simply because politics are so split up at this point.
Yeah, and it's pretty darn nasty. I mean, you know, the past president didn't even show up to pass the baton like they're supposed to.
Well, and he only won 51-49. You know, so there's still a, you know, there's still a big support for the old Kirchnerism is what they call it, I guess. Government that's down there too. So, you know, I guess the thing it comes down to in my idea is perception more than anything else. You know, we know that that's what the market's all about. The market trades perception. We already probably have some of it traded into the market. So, you know, until we really get an answer, none of us know where we're going to go. It just means we have to be prepared. That's all.
Could be sell the rumor and buy the fact, but let's go back to the WASDE figures. They were released this week as well on soybeans. Remained the same at 911 million bushels on the carryout. Or, I'm sorry, that's the wheat number. Remained the same at 465 million bushels on the carryout. It's a big number, no matter what, for domestic carryout. And beans have risen, but they remain under pressure in Chicago.
Yeah, it's just kind of a holding pattern. You talked or listened to some analysts, you know, I guess one analyst this week said $6 beans next year. So there's, you know, definitely concern down the road. But we're in the time frame where Asia buys and they've stepped up the buying pace. And now the trick is to get them shipped out here before they start focusing on the southern hemisphere. Not a whole new outlook here on the numbers we saw this past week. Just confirmation we've got some bushels to work through. I would imagine over time this 465 million bushel area number could come down, but it's going to have to come down quite a bit to be $9 plus bulls down the road.
Yeah, so farmers have had a couple of chances to make cash sales on old crop or current crop soybeans. I suspect not enough of them pulled that trigger. We're going to get a chance again before we get to the end of the month?
We feel so. We feel we're going to hold in here or make an attempt to see some recovery going into year end. Naturally, after the first year, we'll see what develops then. But I think there's going to be some opportunities. It's not going to go as high as you want it to, but I think there's some opportunities out there. And I think the trick is to stay flexible in your marketing and re-ownership program.
Well, Todd, the one thing we can say for sure is this was a commercial's dream. The way we run up, got to the close to the prices that farmers probably should have been selling, and then we took it all away from them on Monday. And now when it gets back to those levels, the farmer will sell some. He might not sell as much as you think he will, but there will be sales when we get back to those levels, I will guarantee you.
Yeah, and I would agree with you completely, Wayne. And I think the other thing is, you know, that we've had some pretty extraordinarily good basis levels, you know, and we've had a lot of guys that have made sales based on how good the basis level is, you know, and I think that's the thing that producers have to be staying on top of is in depending upon what area they live in. The thing I think on the opposite side that we have to recognize is as long as we're up against this South American situation, you know, we're talking about advanced sales already above 50% out of South America for new crop for next year. And so any nice bounce that we see in the futures is going to probably be met by sales coming out of, you know, out of the Southern Hemisphere. They've been very aggressive that way, and for good reason, you know, because they're locking in very, very good prices for themselves. And so I, too, think we're going to get a bounce. I don't know if it's going to be on the futures or if it's actually going to be in basis, but I think it's going to happen. It's kind of typical for the holiday season anyway.
Another item I think that might be important to talk about, the oil-producing countries said, we're just going to leave the spigot open. We're not going to control what's coming out of the countries. And it took a not very long, but a few days to decide what was going to happen in the marketplace. And now, Kurt, here we are. We haven't seen these kinds of lows in the $36 range per barrel since 2008. I looked back. I think it was December of that year. So just as we were really in the depths of the recession, starting in on the crash there, does this put a blanket on the market's upside potential?
Well, I think it's going to keep a lid on it here for a while. But, you know, OPEC was the only organization that really had a production cap for say, and you know, why should they be limited when the rest of the world is not limited? I guess we're going to find out what is true cost of production for oil producing companies and countries in general. Ideas are that OPEC can produce oil at $20 a barrel and we're going to go to $20 a barrel. So I don't think it's like that last low you mentioned when we came off the 148, 150 mm-hmm. high and came straight down.
Oh, that was a drop.
Straight, we virtually came straight back up. I think this is going to take a little bit more time in through here. But when you look long term, I think this is an opportunity to accumulate some ownership over the next few years for a rebound up because things will change at some point in time. It's just a question when.
Wayne and Jackie mentioned this. USDA will release a quick glimpse of what might come out in the outlook. They'll do that Friday. Do you think they'll consider the price of oil longer term at a much lower level than maybe they have been in the past? And USDA's numbers in comparison, for instance, to the University of Illinois for the price of corn, meaning the new plateau long term, Illinois is at around 450, 460, 470. USDA's numbers, at least for the next 5 years, are setting much lower than what Illinois would even think. Illinois' numbers in that next five-year round are not at that 450 level, by the way. They're below that, but they're not at the 370 level USDA has been talking about and talked about last year in their outlook meeting. Does OPEC's push to continue to put crude into the marketplace at a lower cost of production mean that we're not going to get to stay at the new plateau we've been at?
Well, I think it's going to be much harder, Todd, but there's, you know, there's one big thing out there that can change everything. It's called weather. And that's one of the things with the strong El Nino being here and the La Nina maybe could be some of that. We've heard a lot of talk about the possibility of a drought somewhere around the world or many places around the world. You know, we look at India, we look at Africa and all those places that can happen. But yes, I think for this baseline report, what you said is the government will not increase anything for right now.
One thing on this energy thing, too, is with these lower prices, consumption should rise. Not only in the U.S., but in China. And if you've been watching the news this past week, a lot of publicity about smog. And I think they're going to be forced or move more towards an ethanol blend, trying to clear up some air in there. So even though the commodity sector in general is going to be have this over their head, I think there could be some potential of worldwide ethanol demand down the road.
So we opened up that little can where we get to the RFS now, and we can talk about ethanol and biodiesel both. U.S. EPA, of course, announcing its new RFS. That was on November the 30th. Most agree that it is closer to the targets or the mandates, which is actually 15 billion gallons in this year and 15 billion gallons for conventional-based ethanol. From this point forward, next year in 2016, USDA will get to 14.5 billion gallons, so there's some thought that they might only have to really use 14 billion gallons of actual corn-based ethanol or conventional ethanol to get there. That leaves a kind of a 500 million bushel or 500 million gap in gallons. And then the advanced Jackie Vakes will be pushed along, mostly filled by biodiesel. We've seen a rally in the bean oil. That's happened since the month of August. However, bean oil doesn't generally lead the complex higher for soybeans. Can it do it this time around?
Well, you know, the problem you have is the more oil you produce, the more meal you produce, and they play into the bean price. I think one of the things that's interesting is when you look at exports, you know, we had outstanding exports today for corn and beans, but beans are 223 million behind last year, corn's 218 million behind last year, wheat's 98 million behind last year, meal 1.2 million behind last year, and oil up 150,000. Being up 150,000 is not going to be enough, I don't think, to be able to pull beans to where we would like to see them go. And I'd like to roll back for just a second to the crude oil, if we can. One of the things I think we have to keep in mind when you look at the USDA baseline numbers is the impact that a lower crude oil price has on exportable goods from other countries, and China being one of them. You know, they import a lot of cotton. But they're down 42% this year, and it's primarily, they're saying, because of the low crude oil prices and that synthetic materials are so much more competitive. They're figuring by the end of this year, they'll have 2 years' worth of consumption on hand. You know, you look at Russia. Granted, we don't sell much to Russia, but Russia also is going through a really severe problem because of the lower crude oil. I'm 100% on board with Kurt in terms of consumption in other areas. I think that can easily go up, and especially if the U.S. dollar would back down. But if the U.S. dollar doesn't back down, you know, crude oil is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere. And so as long as crude stays down, if the dollar doesn't go any higher, I think we'll probably slide by. But to go back to your original question, I think it's going to be tough for bean oil to be able to pull us to the levels that we'd like to see or that we have seen lately.
All right, let's come to the fundamentals of the corn and the soybean markets as we get into the month of January, and we're a ways away yet. But producers really begin to think about having to move something out of the bin, maybe something that might be in commercial storage as well. They're likely to do that. They have been strong holders. They've had more on hand than they really, most elevators believe that farmers have got more corn on hand than they ever have at this time of year. What should producers be considering, Wayne?
Well, I think that number one, they need to be watching their basis levels, Todd. I think that all of them should, you know, especially in the Indiana area, our basis levels have been tremendous at the ethanol plants. You know, move some corn. If you don't want to price it, you know, price the corn, buy a call, leave it on price, whatever, but move it. Because if we do get a board rally, the basis is going to widen out again or get narrower because we were above board right now. So, but I think, number one, you should be corning your bins just because you don't want your corn going out of condition. You want things like that. But do move on some of these good basis levels. And there will be some corn moved for cash flow needs.
There has been some movement. Some of these good basis areas, they're full in some ethanol plants. I know one area's got like five plants, and four of them are shut down. And, of course, it's the holiday coming up, too. So, but I think there's going to be opportunity, and I totally agree with Wayne. And I think listening to a program, if the analyst was bullish and strictly hanging on the cash grain, might be a mistake. I think you need to formulate some type of strategy and do some replacement. These call options, for example, or volatility is relatively low. And I think you take advantage of the basis and do some re-ownership.
Yeah, I would agree completely. I think that, you know, when you look at the big picture, there's going to be, I think, more expansion of acres down in South America on the bean side of things in Brazil, and probably more reduction in corn there. So that could be a positive to us down the road. But for now, I think both Wayne and Kurt are 100% right on. I've been just telling guys, you know, even if you wanted to do some forward contracting on corn for 2000, you know, for this next December, you can go out there and you can find relatively cheap and low volatility on call options and have yourself in a position where you know what your break even prices are. Give yourself some ability to be able to feel good about it. But if you're just sitting on old crop corn, it depends on where you are in the U.S. That's the hard part. You know, if you're in the eastern part of the U.S., you got really good basis levels. If you're in the western part of the U.S., you have some pretty awful basis levels, and yet they could get much worse. So I think it's just like Kurt said, have a plan. That's really what you have to do. You have to have a plan. And, you know, if your plan is to sell at a certain price and it gets to that price and you check out your basis and it's not good or it's not what you want, then get your butt in and do some type of a put protection or a futures protection because you were willing to sell at that price. You don't know what's going to happen down the road.
On the subject of basis, in the East and the West, we know there's a big difference of the haves and the have-nots. However, there have been trains moving out of the West towards the East. They've gotten at least as far as Decatur. How should producers that are in some of those areas where they've had stronger basis levels based on their locations, but that are really beginning to see some of those trains, trucks come from the West, start to fill needs of their plants? How do they consider that, and how often does it happen? What does it mean to them?
With good merchandise, it's going to happen every day if it's more economical to bring a train in than buy locally. They want to keep their local people happy. They want to buy that grain. They're going to bid up for it. They're going to bid every dime and maybe even a nickel more than it costs them to bring that train in because they want to keep that business. But there's going to be a breaking point on economics. It says, hey, when it gets about this wide, that's about all you're going to get. And I'm thinking that this 30, 35 over, you better take it because you go wider than that and I get trains.
Well, you put up a barricade and stop that movement in there so you protect your own market share is what you do.
Wait, you're going to make the Iowans build the wall? Is that what you're saying at the moment?
Yeah. If only it were that easy, you know, it would be really nice. But, I think that's absolutely the truth. There is a breaking point that says we will offer so much. I guess, you know, if you roll back, and we've all been around since, you know, in the 90s, and you look back into the 90s, and pretty much we were in a situation where basis would get better and futures would get poorer, futures would get better, basis would get poorer. Those are the breaking points. So, you know, I think all three of us are trying to stress, stay on top of that basis, because if you start to see basis just flatten out and do nothing because of the fact that the futures are moving higher or it's actually getting wider, you know that you've now met the point where they're just not willing to pay you anymore.
Yeah, you need to take a advantage of the opportunity, because if you don't in your area, they will import it, and we've seen this happen in the livestock production sectors of the Southeast, and we've seen it on the West Coast. So you got to stay sharp in here.
Hey, speaking of livestock, one final question, and then we'll go to your final thoughts for the day. Maybe, Jackie, you can help me out with this. Somebody else can jump in as well, because bean meal looks to be a pretty good value. Is it a good enough value that those who are end users should lock in some bean meal?
Well, I think, you know, you have to be very careful about what you're doing. You know, if you're going to be locking in feed prices, you better be looking at your overall returns. We got a nice bounce today, I think, because Congress is talking about possibly repealing COOL. Well, we know that that's all about talk, and whether it comes true is a whole different story. But I do think that they should be looking at least locking in a portion of their meal, not necessarily 100%. And, you know, they can always, if they lock it in and the price decides to go lower, you can always buy a put to cover yourself against the price dropping. But it's very difficult in the meal market, when the price goes higher, to fight that difference in basis, because that's where they kill you every time. You know, maybe basis is $10 over right now, and meal prices go higher, and suddenly basis is $30 or $40 higher, and you don't have a good way of fighting that. And so I think locking in a portion and maybe buying yourself a put if you're concerned about the price going down or being prepared to is a really good way to approach it.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've done that strategy with some livestock producers. The thing is, though, it's going to be a situation, too, where we'll watch meal demand this winter, whether it's in the pork sector, the virus showing up again, or bird flu and so forth. Those would be things to watch. But we kind of feel we're starting to crush more for the oil than the meal right now.
Let's get our final words now. We'll start with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, it's getting to be Christmas time, and a lot of us want to sort of forget about the marketing and doing things here, but I do think it's going to take 5 minutes a day and check your basis levels and prices at your local elevator.
Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Yep. Well, I guess we'll get to talk to all of you before Christmas, but a Merry Christmas to everybody that's going to be out there. And I, too, think that it's so easy when you once get that bin filled to just walk past and pat it like a baby's butt. But remember, you know, there's value there. And so just don't forget about it. I agree 100%. You've got to stay on top of it every day.
And Kurt Kimmel.
There's a lot of small opportunities out there, we feel. I don't know if we're going to have any big opportunities. But like we mentioned during the program there, I think you got to sit down, push the pencil, and have a plan to stay in place here as we move into 2016.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Our thanks to our panelists today, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. You may find Commodity Week in our companion programming, like the Closing Market Report, online at willag.org, willag.org. Our programs are updated each and every business day of the year. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.